Good morning and welcome to Flight Logic Brief. It's Wednesday, May 13th, 2026. I'm Alex.
And I'm Sam. We've got a packed show today.
Yeah, we do. Big regulatory milestone out of the Federal Aviation Administration that I want to lead with, plus some really interesting financial results from the charter and fractional world.
Fly Exclusive finally turned the corner, didn't they?
They did. We'll get into that. Plus an investigation wrap on a Bombardier Challenger 604 crash that's been hanging out there for a couple of years now.
And there's a lot bubbling up out of the pilot community we should talk through.
Yeah, some really interesting threads. So let's dive in. So the big headline this morning, the FAA completed phase one of its NOTAM system modernization in April, and they're doing it more than a year ahead of the previous administration's target date.
More than a year, that's not a small thing.
Right. NOTAMs. Notices to Air Missions for anyone newer to this. These are the pilot alerts that tell you about closed runways, lighting outages, temporary flight restrictions, all of it. The system has been creaking along on infrastructure that goes back decades.
Decades. And we're talking about something the FAA issues over 4 million of every year. That's the number that always gets me. 4 million.
4 million annual notices. And phase one was the cloud migration, getting the legacy US NOTAM system off the iron it was running on and into a modern cloud-based architecture.
You know what's interesting to me, though, Alex? This is the same system that had that catastrophic ground stop back in January 2023. The corrupted file that took the whole thing offline for half a day.
Right. Nationwide ground stop.
So there's been pressure on this for years. The previous target was late 2027. Pulling that forward by over a year in the federal IT world, that's actually significant.
Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy made the announcement. Phase one done. Done as of April.
So what's phase two? Because phase one is the plumbing, but pilots are still digging through the same wall of text.
That's the next piece. The whole point of modernization eventually is digital delivery, structured data, hopefully briefings that are actually filtered and readable instead of the everything and the kitchen sink dumps we get now.
Yeah, I mean, every pilot listening has experienced opening a NOTAM package and getting 40 pages of stuff where you have to hunt for the one thing that actually matters to your flight.
Exactly. So the cloud migration is the foundation that lets all of that downstream work happen.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. Cautiously optimistic.
Cautiously optimistic. Source, corporate jet investor.
Let's move over to the charter and fractional world. Corporate jet investor has a few stories I want to hit. The big one, Fly Exclusive, posted its first ever positive adjusted EBITDA in the first quarter.
First ever. And in Q1, which is historically their weakest quarter.
$200,000 of adjusted EBITDA. So not a huge number in absolute terms.
No, but it's the direction, the trend.
Right. Revenue $96.3 million, up 9% year over year. Gross profit up 69% to $19.1
million. 69% on gross profit. That's the story.
So what's driving it? Because Fly Exclusive a year ago, 18 months ago, was not in this place.
No, they weren't. The big move was getting rid of the legacy underperforming aircraft. They had this tail of older jets that were just bleeding them. High maintenance, low utilization, didn't fit the program, didn't match the customer experience they were trying to deliver. And they basically said, look, we're going to take the pain, divest these tails, and standardize.
And that pain is now showing up as gain.
Right. Less downtime, higher utilization on what remains, and that gross profit number tells you the unit economics are finally working.
Speaking of fleet rationalization, that actually connects directly to Wheels Up. Aviation Week reported on their Q1 too.
Phenom 300 only now, right?
Phenom 300 only. They've completed the transition. Entire fleet is now Embraer Phenom 300 light jets.
Same playbook. Cut the long tail, focus on a single type, get your maintenance footprint and your training pipeline and your spares pooling all simplified.
They still posted a loss for Q1 though.
But they're calling it expected.
Expected. The leadership is framing this as the cost of a structured turnaround, not a deteriorating operation, which is the line they have to walk publicly.
Yeah, and look, if you compare it to where they were 2 years ago when there were real questions about whether the company survives, this is a totally different conversation. A loss inside a known turnaround plan is a different animal than a loss when nobody knows what the plan is.
Now, the other CJI story I really want to spend a minute on is the HapaJet Challenger 604 investigation. We've been waiting on this one.
February 2024 crash, Naples, Florida.
Right. So the National Transportation Safety Board final report came out and the FAA investigation has now concluded. The cause was corrosion in the CF-34-3B engine's variable geometry system, leading to dual engine power loss on approach to Naples Municipal Airport.
Dual engine, both of them corrosion related.
Both pilots killed. And it's a Challenger 6-4, which is a workhorse aircraft. Lots of them out there in charter and fractional service.
So the variable geometry system, just for our listeners, that's what controls the variable bleed valves and the variable stator vanes inside the compressor. It's how the engine stays on its operating line through the throttle range. If that system fails, the compressor can stall, and obviously if it's both engines...
You're a glider.
You're a glider, and on approach low, no altitude to work with.
None.
And the corrosion piece is what stings here, because this is a maintenance detectable issue if you're looking for it. So now the entire fleet is on notice. If you operate CF-34-3B powered Challengers, you are inspecting that system with a different level of scrutiny.
HopAjet's statement was, quote, "We will do all we can to ensure this never happens again."
Right. And that's the right statement. But the broader implication is for every operator of these airplanes. Salt air operations, coastal basing, anywhere humidity and corrosion are a factor. This is the wake-up call.
Two more quick CJI items. The African Business Aviation Association more than doubled its membership in the last year. They're up to 55 members.
That's small in absolute terms, but the percentage growth is meaningful, and they've stood up new committees for uncrewed aircraft systems and operational excellence.
Building out the infrastructure.
Building out the infrastructure. African business aviation has been underserved for a long time, and this is the kind of association work that lays the groundwork for everything else.
And Infinity Aviation Group acquired Corporate Air, which is a fixed base operator at Vero Beach Regional Airport in Florida. Their second location.
So Infinity is based out of Nashua, New Hampshire. They're going to need a Florida presence if they're going to play in the corporate market.
8 hangars, full service. South Florida positioning is just where the corporate aviation gravity is right now.
Vero Beach is a smart pick, too. It's not Palm Beach, it's not Fort Lauderdale, but it's reachable from all of those, and you're not fighting the slot constraints and the parking issues at the bigger fields at BioCourse, Aviation Week BizAv.
Aviation Week BizAv had a nice profile on Paraflight, the air ambulance brokerage.
Simshane's operation?
Right, New Jersey-based. He started it in 2014, 5 charters in the first year. By the end of 2025, they were running 1,500 flights a year. 24/7 operation.
That's a real growth curve.
And the origin story is interesting. His father had an emergency medical career, and then his mentor, Steve Zeckheim, used a Learjet to transport a critically ill patient. That stuck with him.
Air ambulance is one of those niches that doesn't get enough attention in business aviation conversations. It's specialized, it's high stakes, it tends to use older jets, often Learjets and the smaller Citation airframes, and the operational requirements are different from a typical charter.
You're flying at all hours. You're often into shorter strips. You have medical crews on board.
And the broker model is interesting because it lets you match the right aircraft to the right mission rather than being constrained to your own fleet. Which for a medical transport where minutes matter, that flexibility is real.
NBAA had a piece this week on hypoxia and what business aviation pilots need to know.
Hypoxia, always relevant.
Always relevant. And the piece walks through some of the fatal accidents that have shaped how we think about this. A 2003 Piper crash that was attributed to poor planning.
And what I want to underline for our audience, Alex, is that hypoxia isn't just a pressurization failure issue. People think hypoxia means a Payne Stewart scenario, the cabin pressurization fails, you're at flight level 400, you've got seconds.
Right.
And yes, that's one mode. But the article makes the point that you can become impaired at altitudes much lower than people anticipate through mechanisms that aren't simple pressurization losses. Carbon monoxide intrusion. Just operating in the high teens with a marginal supplemental oxygen setup.
Or the slow leak. The pressurization that's degrading slowly enough that you don't get an obvious alert.
Exactly. And the insidious thing about hypoxia is that your judgment is the first thing to go. Which means the person who needs to recognize the problem is the person least equipped to recognize it.
Pulse oximeters in the cockpit have become standard equipment for a lot of operators because of this.
As they should be. Cheap, simple, gives you an objective number. If you're seeing 85%, you have a problem. You don't have to feel symptoms to act.
You don't have to feel symptoms to act. That's the point. Source Simple Flying. Let's shift over to some simple flying coverage. Boeing recorded 284 net new orders in the first 4 months of 26.
284.
Strongest opening to a year since 2014. total backlog is sitting at 6,216 aircraft, roughly $576 billion in value.
Half a trillion in backlog. That's where Boeing is. And this is the post-MAX recovery, post-door plug Alaska recovery, the company under the new leadership trying to demonstrate that the order book is real.
Demand has not gone anywhere.
Demand has not gone anywhere. The question is execution. Can they actually build them?
Speaking of capacity and supply, Simple Flying also had a piece on the global airline pilot shortage and why it persists.
Why it persists? Yeah, let's hit this one because I think there's still confusion about what the actual cause is.
The article walks through three big drivers: the lengthy training pipeline, the aging workforce subject to mandatory retirement at 65, and capacity issues across training providers.
And I'd add a fourth that's implicit there, which is the cost. Getting from zero to airline ready is still a six-figure undertaking for most people. And the wage compression at the regional level that we had a few years ago, that's been partly addressed, but the front end of the pipeline is still narrower than the back end.
Right.
So you've got mandatory retirements creating a known wave of departures that the carriers can plan for, but you can't accelerate a CFI's training timeline or the 4 to 6 years it takes someone to go from discovery flight to right seat at a regional.
And that connects to something we're seeing in the Reddit threads this week, which we'll get to.
Yeah, we should talk about that.
A couple of other Simple Flying pieces worth mentioning. Bombardier debuted the Global 8000 at the Catarina Aviation Show in Sao Paulo. South American debut.
First time. And they brought it alongside the Global 6500 and the Challenger 3500.
South American business aviation is a market everybody's watching.
Brazil specifically. The fleet density and the geography make it a natural fit for the long-range stuff. You've got significant distance between major commercial centers, you've got an established business aviation infrastructure, and the buyer base is there.
Also, Duncan Aviation completed two Gulfstream G650 144-month inspections. The 144-month is the 12-year inspection.
Which is significant because we're now at the point where the original G650 deliveries from 2012 onward are coming due for that heavy check.
So you've got a maturing fleet, you've got the MRO infrastructure catching up to support it. Speaking of which, Allied Market Research is projecting the business jet maintenance market to hit $10.4 billion by 2032, growing at a 4.5% compound annual rate.
4.5% compounded over almost a decade in MRO. That's a healthy market.
And on the lighter side, Simple Flying did a profile of Michael Jordan's Gulfstream G650R registered November 236 Mike Juliet.
236.
23 for the jersey, 6 championships, MJ for the initials.
Of course.
Elephant print interior detailing.
That's a G650ER, near the end of the production run for that model, worth 30-something million typically before custom completions.
Two military-focused pieces from Simple Flying I want to flag. One on the B-21 Raider and what those dark panels on the belly actually are.
Air data probe arrays, right? Radar transparent dielectric panels.
Right. They cover antennas and sensors, but they're radar transparent, so they don't compromise the stealth signature. Speculation online had them as everything from weapons bays to mystery sensors.
Stealth aircraft design is fundamentally about managing where your antennas live, because antennas have to talk to the outside world, but radar cross-section requires you to control every surface discontinuity.
And the other one is the Air Force One backup fleet. There's a Shadow 757 fleet that follows the president around for redundancy and to access smaller airports the VC-25A can't get into.
Four of them, I think the article said.
Four. And the VC-25A obviously is the big 747-based airplane everyone recognizes.
But you can't get a 747 into a lot of regional fields. So if the president is going to a smaller community, the 757 is what actually lands.
One last Simple Flying piece on the 787-9 versus the A333-900 range comparison. The 787-9 has a maximum range of 8,705 miles. The A330-900 is at 8,438.
So a 267-mile gap, which is real, but it's not a fleet-defining gap.
No.
What it does is it gives the 787-9 the ability to do things like Qantas Perth to London, which is right at the edge of what's commercially viable for the airframe.
Right. And the A330-900 is doing 6,000-mile transatlantic missions all day long where that extra range just doesn't matter.
Right airplane for the right mission.
Right airplane for the right mission. Source Google News. Google News aggregated a few items I want to flag, and a couple are tragic, so I want to handle them carefully.
Yeah.
National Transportation Safety Board investigators are on the way to a business jet crash site in North Carolina.
Limited information at this point.
Limited information. Investigation is preliminary. We'll watch for the prelim report.
And there's a separate report referenced. A fatal accident in Maine. A business jet attempting to take off in a snowstorm at Auburn Lewiston Municipal. 6 fatalities.
6 aboard. Active snowstorm at the time. The aircraft has been reported as a Bombardier Challenger 300 series.
Winter operations and the takeoff phase. We don't have a probable cause, obviously, but the proximity of those factors will be the focus of the investigation. Contamination, performance calculations, anti-ice and de-ice procedures.
Yeah, and I'll just say for our listeners, we don't speculate on cause. We let the investigators do their work, and we'll cover the prelim and the final when they're released.
Same for the North Carolina event.
On a different note, Politico Europe is reporting that business jet use continues to soar in Europe while jet fuel concerns mount.
Which is the European story we've been tracking for a couple of years now. Operations are growing, the environmental pressure is growing, and the sustainable aviation fuel infrastructure isn't catching up fast enough.
The supply-demand mismatch on SAF is real, and it's not closing.
It's not closing. And the political pressure in Europe specifically continues to ratchet up. Operators flying into European airspace need to be tracking that closely.
Let's talk about some video coverage. There's a Frontier Airlines A321 incident at Denver that's getting a lot of attention.
May 9th, right?
May 9th, A321 striking a trespasser on runway 17 left during takeoff roll. The strike caused an engine compressor stall and a fire.
Smoke into the cabin.
Smoke into the cabin. Emergency evacuation. The video piece raised the question of why this isn't an NTSB-investigated event.
Which is an interesting jurisdictional question, because the strike of a person on the runway, that's not necessarily an NTSB-reportable event under their criteria depending on the airframe damage.
Right, the criteria are pretty specific.
If the substantial damage threshold isn't met, and if the operational characterization fits within an FAA-handled investigation, the NTSB can stand down.
But the optics are a little weird. You've got passengers evacuating an airplane with smoke in the cabin and a fire on the engine.
And to passengers and a lot of media, that looks like a serious incident. Operationally, the determinant is the damage and the cause classification, and a runway incursion by a trespasser is a security event as much as a safety event.
Right.
So I get the question, but I also get why the lines fall where they fall.
And the other YouTube piece is from AOPA, with Jackie Brown, the senior medical certification specialist there. She's talking about the Wingman Med Express simulator.
Wingman Med Express. So that's the practice tool that lets you walk through the Med Express application before you actually submit.
Right. So Med Express is the FAA's online portal for the medical application. You fill it out, the AME, the aviation medical examiner, sees it before you sit down with them.
And the simulator lets you practice without submitting.
Without submitting. Which is huge, because once you put something in Med Express, it's in there.
Yeah, you can't unring that bell.
Especially for anyone going through HIMSS, special issuance. Anyone with a history that requires careful disclosure, practicing the answers first is just smart.
It's the kind of resource that I wish more people knew about before they had a problem, rather than after.
So, Reddit. The Your Flying community had a really interesting mix this week, and I want to pull out the threads that touch on stuff our audience deals with.
There's a lot in there.
A few themes I noticed. 1. Career anxiety from people in the training pipeline. There's a post titled, quote, "Now that the music has stopped, what's next?" End quote. From a student with about 200 hours who's looking at the timeline ahead and getting nervous about how long it takes to get to an airline seat.
Which connects right back to the simple flying pilot shortage piece. The pipeline is long, the hiring waves are episodic, and people coming up right now are looking at a different market than people who started 2 or 3 years ago.
The market has cooled.
It has cooled. The pandemic recovery surge is over. The structural shortage is still there in the medium term, but in the near term, the visible hiring at the regional level has slowed.
There's also a really good first-person account of an actual engine failure. A private pilot, about 120 hours, flying from Reed Hillview to Fresno Chandler.
California.
California flight. Engine starts running rough at 7,500 feet, then quits during the descent. Off airport forced landing.
And the pilot is alive to write about it on Reddit, which means he or she did something right.
Did something right. And that's actually a great training case study. Newer pilot, real emergency, executed the procedure.
You know what I love about those posts, Alex? It's that the community gets to learn from real events that are below the threshold of formal investigation. They're not going to be NTSB cases, but they're rich learning material.
Right.
The fundamentals worked, best glide, pick a spot, run the flow, land the airplane.
There were also a number of posts that touch on medical certification topics. One about a deferred Category 1 medical in Canada because of a prior driving conviction.
Right. And the lesson there is the same lesson regardless of jurisdiction, which is that prior history matters and disclosure matters, and you need to plan ahead for these conversations with your medical examiner.
There's a post about GLP-1 medications, specifically about starting Zepbound. The question is about disclosure timing with the FAA and the AME.
Which is a topic the FAA has been evolving its position on, slowly. The GLP-1 drugs are everywhere now, and the FAA has had to figure out how to handle them in the context of medical certification.
And a thread on USPS informed delivery as a tool for HIMSS pilots who get certified mail from the FAA.
Wait, this one I actually want to mention because it's so practical. Informed delivery just emails you scans of your incoming mail. So if you're in HIMSS, where certified letters from the FAA carry real weight and real deadlines, knowing one is coming a couple of days ahead is meaningful.
You can prepare. You can have your representative on standby.
You can have your AME ready. You can have whatever paperwork you might need pulled. That couple of days of lead time is real value.
Couple of training threads worth mentioning. A pilot in Arizona, 30 hours in, struggling to stay ahead of the airplane. Turbulent conditions, delayed power corrections.
30 hours, that's right where everyone hits that wall.
Right where everyone hits that wall.
And the answer is almost always trim and scan. Trim the airplane so it wants to fly the attitude you want, then scan ahead to where you'll be in 15 seconds, not where you are right now.
Similar thread on altitude deviations during private pilot maneuvers. S-turns, turns around a point, steep turns. Plus or minus 200 feet.
Same answer, trim, and eyes outside.
And then on the other end of the spectrum, a thread asking why the FAA's 2023 Aviation Instructor's Handbook still teaches left brain, right brain theory and individual learning styles.
When both of those concepts have been debunked in cognitive science for like 30 years.
30 years.
And the handbook is recommending instructional strategies based on it.
This is a recurring issue with FAA educational materials. They're slow to update and they sometimes lag the underlying science.
By a generation.
By a generation. And every CFI candidate is reading this stuff and going, wait a minute.
Reasonable response, yeah.
One more I want to mention. There's a post asking about a possible close approach between a FedEx flight, FedEx 710, and a British Airways flight, BA49, near Seattle-Tacoma on May 12th around 0114 Zulu.
That's about 6:14 p.m. Pacific the previous day.
Right. Tracking data suggests a close approach. We don't have official confirmation from the FAA or the airlines yet.
But these things do tend to come out eventually if there was a TTS event or a controller noted loss of separation.
We'll watch for it.
One thing I'll add about the Reddit fire hose, Alex. The signal to noise is wide, but the signal that's in there is genuinely useful. Real pilots, real situations.
Real situations. And speaking of which, there are two more quick items from Reddit I want to hit before we wrap. There was an APU fire indication on an A321neo out of Athens. Returned, emergency evacuation, 3 minor injuries.
APU fire indications. That's an interesting one because the auxiliary power unit is back in the tail. The evacuation calculus when you've got an indication versus an actual fire is something we as an industry are still working on.
You don't want a no-fault evacuation if you can avoid it.
Right. Evacuations injure people. Slides injure people. So the threshold matters.
And there was a discussion about Horizon Aircraft's Cavorite X7. This is one of the EVTOL programs that's been promoted on stock picking subreddits.
Which is one of the warning signs for any aerospace investment when you see it pumped on the stock subs.
But the airframe is technically interesting. Fan and wing hybrid electric vertical takeoff and landing design.
Fan and wing is a different architecture from the tilt rotor approach you see from a Joby or an Archer. It's an older idea that's been revisited because the powertrain efficiency has changed.
We'll keep an eye on it.
We'll keep an eye on it.
All right. That's the brief for Wednesday, May 13th, 2026. Big day on the regulatory side with the NOTAM modernization milestone, real progress in the charter and fractional financial story, and the HOPA-JET investigation closure that should sharpen everyone's maintenance focus on those CF-34-3B engines.
Fly safe out there. Brief well. Check your NOTAMs. Even with the modernization, there's still a wall of text, so read them carefully.
We'll see you tomorrow morning. I'm Alex.
I'm Sam. Thanks for listening to Flight Logic Brief.